Well, greetings again, friends and brethren. I hope this finds everyone doing well. Before I begin the message today, well, today is, for the sake of dates, it's January 31st, last day of January of 2009. And I'd like to begin by reading an email that I received this past week. Actually, I've been re-mailing this lady back and forth, and it's just a matter of time, I think, before she's a member with us. And I just want to read excerpts of this first email. I have talked to her since then through a couple other emails, and she's probably going to be with us at some time in the near future, but I thought I had some interesting things to point out in it, and I just wanted to show, you know, once in a while I do get positive emails from people out there, and this is one. Of course, I get a lot of negative ones too, obviously, but let me just begin by reading. It says, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Coran, hello again." Well, first let me qualify this statement she's about to make, because she had requested the CDs. And then when she requested the CD, she had sent a donation through the PayPal link on the website. So I had sent her back an email telling her thank you for that. And then after she received the CD, she sent another contribution or tithe through the PayPal link again. And so I had emailed her back to tell her thank you for that contribution and tithe to the Church of God. It's much appreciated. It'll be put to good use. So anyway, here's her response to that. She said, "Hello again. Yes, sir, I did receive my CDs, and I am so very grateful. Thank you. Yes, I did send God's tithes to the Church of God after much intense fasting and prayer. I take it very seriously that I do not toss God's tithes to the wolves again. Some things about me. I was called, and I'm not going to mention her name here, or certain other things like the churches she was with and all that, or names, because it's just, I don't think it's appropriate at this time. So she said some things about me. I was called to God's truth on July 4th, 2000, reading Mystery of the Ages. I could go on and on about this, but for time's sake, I better not today. My brother, sister-in-law, and their two children were members of, and here's a particular church, which I'm not going to mention. I too became a member, thinking they were the church where God was doing his work. After all, they were fighting for Mr. Armstrong's books. I was baptized by," and she mentions a name, "in 2001 after studying for a solid year. Long story short, God removed me from that church where I spent 3 years on my own knees." That's what she's been doing, spent 3 years on her own knees, keeping God's commandments. "And, of course, I was marked, making it difficult for my brother and his family to speak with me. However, as time went on, we did bump into one another at our parents' campground. And then I asked him," her brother, "why it was okay for them to change Mr. the Ages. He wasn't aware of those changes, see, and shortly after he left too, that group. And then we joined the," and this is another church group, "and have been there for the last almost 3 years. But through much fasting and prayer, things have come aware to me, things I didn't go looking for. Up to this point, I have been very comfortable in the," and that's the name of this church. "I love many brethren. I have done transcription for them. I've been very active within the church. I sang in the choir and helped serve at all the feasts. Please know that I'm not bragging here. I'm just explaining. I love serving. It's a wonderful honor. Anyway, because I was the one living in," well, she states her city, "I worked directly with one of the deacons and current host, my brother, helping to locate a meeting place for the Michigan congregation." I will give the state, it's in Michigan, "and all the holy days, etc. So when I say I wasn't looking for this, I sure wasn't. I ran across your website somehow. It was on my desktop. It shows that I put it there on November 26, 2007. At 7:26 p.m. I just ran across it again while I was cleaning up my desktop, and there it was. So here I am now, where I have been brought right back to Mystery of the Ages, to Mr. Armstrong, God's end-time Elijah, who Christ used to restore all things. Now it is time for me to depart from," and she states this church she is leaving, "I'm done. I see how watered down things are. I see things now I didn't see before. I am staying with the trunk of the tree. I know I am to seek my own salvation in reading 1 John 4:16 to the end. Once again, my Papa, our Heavenly Father, has brought me back to this scripture with even greater meaning. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. These splinters use the same thing over and over. They scare people into staying with them. This is true. I'll pause for a minute. That is true. We've seen that many times. Continue. They say if you aren't behind this work, you will go into the tribulation, for this is God's work, and it is nowhere else. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Corian, humbly and through God's grace and the gift of my job, I am a faithful tither. I would never not want to support God's work. It is part of my armor. Humbly I say, I fast consistently by God's strength through His Spirit. I will be fasting more often even yet. God has so drawn me to this. This is the closest we can get to God in this human form and break all the bonds of Satan. I have so much to learn and so much to study. I wasn't raised with Mr. Armstrong. I have so much work ahead. I do not wish to be hostile in my exit to, and then she names this church that she's leaving. Many will be very surprised I have left. However, I'm at peace, and I trust in my high King, Priest, the Great Shepherd, Jesus the Christ, my Savior, Lord, and my King. I want nothing but to obey Him, to keep His laws and commandments, so I can know and show God I can live by His government. I want to be purified and tried by fire mercifully. I want to fit neatly and perfectly into the body of Christ. My greatest desire is that Jesus Christ will say, quote, well done, good and faithful servant. I want to have the faith of Christ and trust only in Him, not in some man. If God wants me in the tribulation because I'm not found worthy to go to the place of safety, I must trust that it is His will, and I will not question. My life has not been mine for a long time, and I only wish to empty myself more. I will not fear the ones that can kill my body, but I fear the one that can kill my soul and my spirit. I'm not afraid to stand alone, because I know no one can take me from the palm of my Heavenly Father's almighty hand. Perhaps if God moves you, she's talking to me here, I guess. Perhaps if God moves you, there might be others to fellowship with, and she names her city. I want to keep God's commandments on the Sabbath, the Holy Convocation, or Commanded Assembly. I realize we must be ever so careful to protect the flock. I assure you, I am not one of the captivators trying to lure them into danger or feed off of them like a hireling. I have already been in fasting and prayer for repentance for not holding fast to what God had given me, but now that's over. Only the restored truths from Christ given to Mr. Armstrong, our Father in the gospel, will I listen to or study from. If you see anything in this email that needs correction, please do so. Thank you for everything. And then she signs her name. Well, I thought that was a very inspiring and revealing email. And there's so much in there about this lady's character and how far she's already come and how much she's waking up and realizing what holding fast to all things means, and getting back to that trunk of the tree. And so I just thought it was amazing. And there's some parallels in there that I went through with a particular group where she said she was marked, and I told her I was marked two times by this same minister, the head of this church. So I was a double whammy when I left there back in the 90s. So and she, you know, so she doesn't want to be hostile in her exit from this church she's leaving. So that's a good Christian attitude. Because we do see a lot of hostility today among God's people, especially when the groups begin to split up more and more. But I was amazed by this comment here where she says, if God wants me in the tribulation because I'm not found worthy to go to the place of safety, I must trust that it is His will, and I will not question. Well, isn't that a wonderful attitude? See, brethren, I hope that's our attitude, because I wonder every day if I'm going to make it to the place of safety, much less God's kingdom, see, because I fall down just like we all do, and we all sin. So I have to always keep that in my mind, that it may be God's will for me, Dan Corian, to go through the Great Tribulation. And I'm sure most of you, if you're honest, probably think the same thing about yourselves. But her attitude is good here, because she says that if that's the case, then I will not question. Well, how many of us can say that? Or will we just whine and complain if we're stuck in a tribulation? Why did you leave me here? Well, if God does leave us in the tribulation, it's because it's His will, and we need that extra fire to finish developing us. So we, in that respect, we shouldn't question. And then she had sent me another email the next day or a couple of days following, where she gave me some more details about this church group she's leaving. It's one of those that has a self-proclaimed apostle in it, God's apostle on the earth type thing. And he had been screaming out to the people that about tithes. And if you don't send me your tithes, you're out of the church. And if I don't, and there's X number of you, if I don't have your tithes on my tithe checks by next week on my desk, you're out of here. Well, see, look, is that the mind of Christ? Is that the mind of Jesus Christ? See, no, it's not. Mr. Armstrong never even did that. Now, he did give some scolding sermons occasionally years ago, and rightfully so, when some of us in the church did get slack on tithing and offerings. But he didn't threaten to put anybody out because he didn't receive their checks and their tithes. And so this just shows the mindset of some of these men out here. They just want to get. It's the get attitude, and it's become downright vicious and satanic. But I had also sent back an email to her showing her, as far as worshiping on the Sabbath, that the church today really is scattered. It's not like it was during the Philadelphia era. That was really about the only time in the history of God's church, where it was during that last part of the 20th century, when under Mr. Armstrong, and the temple was being built, or the church, that we could meet in large congregations throughout the United States and other parts of the world. So we really kind of became spoiled in that respect, because down through the ages, God's people have been very scattered, and it's been very hard for many of God's true people down through the ages to meet on Sabbath, for Sabbath worship, in large congregations. Like the first century church, for example, they met in many members' homes. And today, that's what we do. Mr. and Mrs. Armstrong, I'm reminded of, they kept the first 7 years, Sabbath and holy days, alone, before they even realized what the purpose of the holy days were. So I was reminding this lady of this, and then also what it says in Matthew 18, verse 20, where Christ says that there are two or three gathered in my name, that my Father and I will be there with them. Well, so my point is, if you're by yourself, and you're worshiping the true God in spirit, then Christ says Him and the Father are there with you. So that makes three, doesn't it? Even if you're by yourself, see? So, and then also, in 1 John chapter 1, verse 3, it says that Christ says that our fellowship is with Jesus Christ and the Father. So that's who our fellowship is with. So if we're worshiping in spirit, even if we're by ourselves, but if we're worshiping in the right way through that true doctrine, then Christ and the Father are there with us. And then also there in in Leviticus 23 in verse 3, I pointed out to her where God says the Sabbath is sanctified in all of your dwellings. That means your homes, see? So here we are at the end of the age, where, and also the Bible, of course, goes on to say that we're to fellowship with those of like mind. Well, the majority of God's people today are not of like mind. See, so we have to find those, and Christ is allowing us to find each other, of those who are of like mind, and so we can worship in that one mind of Jesus Christ. And so, anyway, I thought that was a very inspiring email, and just wanted to share that with everyone. Hopefully this lady will be with us, pretty soon, and when she is, I'll announce it through the regular email channels there to all our membership. Well, today, as I mentioned at the outset, is January 31st, 2009, and I wanted to take special note at this moment of this day, because on God's Hebrew calendar, today is Shabbat the 6th, and Mr. Armstrong died on January 16th of 1986, and on that day, on the Roman calendar of January 16th, on that year, on the Hebrew calendar, it was Shabbat 6. So even though on the Roman calendar, January 16th is the anniversary of Mr. Armstrong's death, on God's calendar, it is today. This year happens to be January 31st, but it's on God's calendar, today is Shabbat 6, and that is, today is the actual anniversary of the death of Mr. Armstrong. And so it ends, today ends the 23rd year since his death and begins the 24th year. And I thought that was interesting, that this is going to be coming, this 2009 will be the 24th year since Mr. Armstrong died, but also significantly, if you're into studying what time cycles represent, the 19-year time cycles, this year is also a 19th, or the end of a 19-year time cycle. 2009 is. So when we come up on the end of this year and approach January of 2010, that will be the end of a time cycle and the beginning of another one. And now what is the significance of that? Well, you go back and read what Mr. Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages and the autobiography and many of his other writings about what time cycles represent, and there is quite a bit of significance. I can go back briefly to the last century in 1934, is when the work really began to expand through the Radio Church of God and begin to go throughout coast to coast across this nation, the preaching of the gospel. And then one time cycle after that, which was 1953, which all this is documented in Mr. Armstrong's writings, in 1953, which was one time cycle later, is when the World Tomorrow broadcast began to go for the first time worldwide through Radio Luxembourg in Europe. And then the next time cycle was in 1972, when Mr. Armstrong had speculated at one time, or thought perhaps that might be when the work would end. He never set any dates. He certainly did not, but he thought that it could be a time when the work would end. And many of the members in ministry under him thought that also. Well, then, so the next time cycle, of course, what we did find out, he found out through the 1970s, up until the late 70s, is that he had to go again to the world and preach the gospel again to many nations. So he really did it more than once. And then by the time the end of the 70s came, in the early 80s, he spent the last 7 to 9 years of his life putting the church back on track, because it had gotten off track and the doctrines had become watered down. And then the next time cycle would be 1991, and by then, that was, if you look at the fact that 1985 was technically the last year that God used Mr. Armstrong. I realize he died in January of 86, but 1985 is when technically the work was complete that God had given Mr. Armstrong to do. Because he got quite ill during that year, and the last half of the year, he was very limited on his traveling and didn't really do a whole lot. He just kept getting weaker and weaker. So God was just letting him kind of slowly go to sleep. And so if you look at from that perspective, from 1985 through 1991, that's 7 years, the last 7 years of that time cycle, see? And then 91, of course, is when the first Gulf War began. And then if you add 19 years to 1991, we come to 2010, which is a year from now. So here we are approaching the end of a time cycle. And I have to wonder, my friends and brethren, looking at what's going on in the world today, we can see many things beginning to accelerate related to prophecy being fulfilled. And I have to wonder that I've already said many times that 2009 is going to be a very significant year, and certainly last year was too, because in 2007 and 8 period, but this coming year is going to be very pivotal. And so by the time this year ends, 2009, and 2010 begins, this time cycle will come to a close. So I have to wonder if this might be the time cycle that's ending that Mr. Armstrong thought was going to happen in 1972. And instead, God gave two more time cycles, see? And of course, one of them encompasses the whole Laodicean era, this last time cycle. So it's a good possibility things may wrap up. I'm not setting dates because I can't. I wouldn't want to do that. Even if I knew something, I wouldn't do that. I'm just going by what God has historically done, significant things, and things have happened on these time cycles throughout the centuries, and especially in the last century and leading up to our time now. And we know the time is just simply not going to continue on. So it's exciting when you look at all these things dovetailing together and seeing what's going on in the world today. And here we are, and I've covered it many times, the economic collapse that we're in the middle of, and that's a little bit what I'm going to discuss again today. I know I covered a lot from different angles and different points of view, but it's really one of the major prophetic events of our time that we're witnessing right now. As I've said many times, what we are witnessing in this economic collapse is, actually it's beginning to go into a depression now, as I've warned about, and I'd actually been warning about this before it was hitting the news. I mean, back in 2007, I was talking about, whenever I was studying into and watching the subprime crisis, mortgage crisis. And that's really, if you go back and look at the historical data, and the Europeans certainly have, because they can trace this worldwide economic crisis that we're in all the way back to this subprime financial or mortgage crisis caused and started here in the United States, where it began in 2007, bringing this economy down. Although the underlying causes have been there for a long time, at least 30 years or more, Mr. Armstrong warned about it. But here we are now living in the time where those prophecies he warned of, one of them being economic collapse, he mentioned it many times, is now happening. And so, and as I mentioned many times, when we see these things happening, in a way it's exciting because we're seeing God beginning to intervene in the affairs of man, and he's allowing these prophecies to begin to take place. So things could really speed up this coming year on, and I think they will, and it's really kind of interesting how it dovetails into 2010 and beyond, because that's the end of a time cycle. So the tribulation is not too far in the distant future. It's not. So if you want a title today, now we hear a lot in the news about this economic stimulus plan is trying to be rapidly pushed through another one again, like they did back in November. They're trying to push another one through real fast, so no one will have time to read the fine print. But you see a lot. I think Congress passed it last week, at least the Democrats did. All the Republicans voted against it. But it's going to the Senate this coming week, and they're probably going to diddle around with it and modify it and add more to it. Who knows how it's going to work out, but they're estimating it to be around $1 trillion, give or take, possibly more, $1 trillion. And they're just tossing these big, huge numbers around now like they're nothing. And they're continuing the old approach of just throwing money at a problem, which doesn't really address the underlying problem or cause. They're trying to do like modern medicine. They're trying to treat the symptom rather than the cause. So you see a lot in the news about this economic stimulus plan. So if you want a title for this message today, it is God's Economic Stimulus Plan. God's Economic Stimulus Plan. So what I'd like to begin with is just to read some things that I've printed off from the internet this morning, news articles. And I know all of you do read the news and keep up with this, what's going on, I'm sure. But these are just a few little articles from different, completely different directions and points of view. But it shows what's going on behind the scenes and what's about to happen. It has to do with this current government under Mr. Obama, and also what Mr. Bush did in his last few months of his administration, how it's all tying together, and what it's going to lead to. And of course, we know we have the outline of prophecy and what's going to happen. But these are just some little things that show proofs of the times that we're living in and how things could snap together so suddenly to bring that beast, that European Union, to full power. The first one I'd like to read is from the Financial Times, and it was dated 127, just a couple of days ago. And it's just, I won't read the whole article, I just want to read the introduction to it. It says here that the title of it is The Case for a Single European Sovereign Bond. The Case for a Single European Sovereign Bond. And I'll explain what that means as we read on. It says, the rise in European bond spreads has triggered a discussion among the financial ministers about the wisdom of a joint issuance of a single European bond. In other words, they're wanting to issue their version of the U.S. Treasury bill, see? But they want to do a single European one that blankets and covers all of Europe. To continue reading, it says, it is a bad pretext for a good idea. It is difficult to see how a common bond issuance would solve the acute problem of a hypothetical payment default of a member state of the Eurozone. But it is a good idea, nevertheless. A common Eurozone market for government, here's the key that you need to listen to. A common Eurozone market for government debt would be a powerful rival to the United States Treasury market, see. That means the UST bills are treasury bonds that we sell to help finance our debt. So it would be a powerful rival to the U.S. Treasury market, and it could bring substantial financial and economic benefits. Well, that's all I'm going to read from that article, because it goes on to give a bunch of lengthy detail about it. Well, I thought that was interesting, that some of the discussions going on now in the economic circles, monetary circles in Europe, is to establish a common bond, a Eurozone bond or European bond, to compete or rival the U.S. Treasury bond. And the significance of that, brethren, is because the world is already beginning to have second thoughts. I dropped my microphone here. Excuse me, I'll have to put it back on. But the world, our treasury in debt right now is financed primarily by China and Japan and Germany and some other European countries. To the tune of billions and billions of dollars. Whenever the United States keeps passing these huge economic stimulus plans, these countries are beginning to realize that they no longer want to fund our debt, because they know that as time goes on, they're not going to be paid back for it. So it's just a matter of time, and actually it's already begun. Many of the countries have begun to withdraw or cash in their T-bills or the U.S. Treasury. In countries like China, who is one of the largest funders of treasury bonds, or buyers of treasury bonds, are beginning to pull out because their own economy is suffering because of the recession. And another thing that we can keep your eye on, which I was reading about, I didn't print anything off on that, but we have a coming trade war coming between China and the United States and the European Union. In fact, I read an article last night, or early this morning, I can't remember which, but it shows that there is the European Union and Chinese are working right now to build a combined trade bloc, become strong trading partners. And the one reason they're doing that is because they're beginning to just ignore the United States. They're almost not, as if we're not even becoming a powerful player anymore. They're just being kind of washed to the side. And a lot of that really is traced back to our own fault, as I mentioned before. But it's beginning to show these sentiment more and more, and they're not hiding it like they were just a year or two ago. They've become more vocal in blaming this worldwide economic crisis on the United States. So it's gonna cause us to become more isolationist or protectionist or whatever you call it. But this next article really ties in with that, and it's from the EU Observer newspaper, and the title is "The European Union is Wary of U.S. Protectionism Threat." The EU is watching closely. Now, they really have to pay attention to this, because what we're beginning to see here is the European Union is actually beginning to intervene in United States politics and our government policies. And this article goes on to show this. The EU is watching closely to see whether a Buy American provision relating to steel will make it into the final version of the U.S. stimulus plan bill to be signed by Barack Obama, fearing it will affect European exports. So what that means is, one of the things that's in this stimulus bill that's going up before the Senate this coming week, and one of those little hidden pages here, and I think they said it was 675 pages or something, and most people haven't had time to read it, but they're just trying to push it through. There's a lot of pork barrel or earmark spending in it, which have absolutely nothing to do with creating jobs or economic stimulus. But anyway, one of the things that's in there to try to help the economy is a law that says that for new construction projects, especially commercial or government-funded ones, that any steel has to be bought from the United States only. In other words, don't import it anymore. Only buy. And what they're trying to do there is to stimulate the steel industry again, because it's just about, been wiped out over the last 20, 30 years. So, looking at it from an American point of view, well, they're trying to help the steel industry. But Europeans are saying, no, wait a minute, we've been importing steel, and we want to continue to import steel. But let me continue reading. It says the provision forcing contractors to use only U.S.-made steel in development projects funded by the proposed $825 billion stimulus plan is contained in a version approved by the House of Representatives on Wednesday, 28 January, that's this past week. The Senate is currently debating the bill. Now listen to this. Speaking at a daily press briefing on Thursday, the European Union spokesperson, Peter Powell, said Trade Commissioner Catherine Ashton, now she's the Trade Commissioner for the European Union, listen, she was monitoring the situation. Here's what he said. We are looking into the situation before we have the final text. It would be premature to take a stance on it, he said. However, he says, listen to this. One thing we can be absolutely certain about is if a bill is passed which prohibits the sale or purchase of European goods on American territory, that is something we will not stand idly by and ignore, he continued. Isn't that interesting? This is the European Trade Commission now is making this statement about our government and this economic stimulus package, and in other words, our governmental process. They say if a bill is passed which prohibits the sale or purchase of European goods on American territory, that is something we will not stand idly by and ignore. Isn't that interesting? Now, that's leading to some prophetic things. Let me continue reading. Under the current proposal, foreign steel can only be used for infrastructure projects funded by the stimulus plan if the head of a federal department decides that using solely U.S. steel would increase costs by more than 25%. But now listen, the European Confederation of Iron and Steel Industries, that's from the EU, it's called Eurofer, demanded that the EU contest the provision in the World Trade Organization, saying it was clearly in breach of current trade rules. So what in other words, is what's happening is the European Union is threatening to take the United States to the World Trade Organization or to court over this. Let me see. Let me read on here a little bit. It says, speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, that was this past week or so here, WTO Chief Pascal Lamy said he was concerned that countries would increasingly turn to protectionist measures during the economic downturn. He says it is natural in such a crisis that there is a big call for protection, but that does not mean there should be protectionism, he said. Well, pause from reading here because it does go on to say that fears of increasing protectionism in the face of the global crisis have also been raised elsewhere. So I think that's all I'm going to read from this article, but I remember hearing years ago when Mr. Armstrong was alive that they were teaching and preaching that we would see this time coming where the United States would become more isolationist and protectionist and kind of closed off from the world, and at the same time it would be a time when other countries begin to really have more direct and vocal hate towards us, and that's exactly what we're seeing today. Now finally, in this other article I'm going to read, well, not finally, but it's another article. This is written by a man named, you may know the name, Dick Morris. If you watch Fox News, he's a frequent commentator on there. He did work under the first Clinton administration, Clinton's first 4 years back in the 90s. Dick Morris had worked for that administration. He's long since become a lot more conservative. And I'm not sure if he's actually a Republican, but he's not a Democrat anymore. If he is, he's not a normal one. But here's an article he wrote back in November, and I thought it was kind of revealing as it ties into this current administration. And something else that I'm going to read to you shortly about the socialist policies, the socialism that this country is moving towards. And he's really kind of, in this article, he's kind of ticked off at George Bush, obviously. I mean, he obviously supported Mr. Bush, but he saw what was going on behind the scenes and what it's leading to. And so he's kind of voicing his opinion in here. But I'm going to go ahead and read it because it does show something very prophetic in here. This article by Dick Morris is entitled Bush's Legacy, which is European Socialism. The results of the this was back in November now, right after that G20 economic summit. He says the results of the G20 economic summit amount to nothing less than, listen to this, the seamless integration of the United States into the European economy. In 1 month of legislation and one diplomatic meeting, the United States has unilaterally abdicated all the gains for the concept of free markets won by the Reagan administration and surrendered in total to the Western European model of socialism. See, we surrendered to the Western European model of socialism. Stagnation and excessive government and regulation. Sovereignty is out the window. Without a vote, we are suddenly members of the European Union. Isn't that interesting? This is what this man writes. Without a vote, we are suddenly members of the European Union. Given the dismal record of those nations at creating jobs and sustaining growth, merger with the Europeans is like a partnership with death. At the at the G20 meeting, Bush agreed to subject the Securities and Exchange Commission, that's the SEC, and our other regulatory agencies to the supervision of a global entity that would critique its regulatory standards and demand changes if it felt they were necessary. Bush agreed to create a College of Supervisors. We'll pause from reading. Well, what did I just read to you from this other article? The European Trade Commission now is voicing its opinion in disdain with what's going on in this bill being passed by our own government. So, you know, since when in our history did we have other countries or blocks of countries dictate what our policies would be as they were even being passed within the House of the Senate or Congress? Well, now we're actually seeing it. So Mr. Morris here is saying this is what's happened. I'll read that paragraph again. Bush agreed to subject the SEC and our other regulatory agencies to the supervision of a global entity that would critique its regulatory standards and demand changes if it felt they were necessary. Bush agreed to create a College of Supervisors. According to the Washington Post, it would, quote, examine the books of major financial institutions that operate across national borders so regulators could begin to have a more complete picture of banks' operations. Their scrutiny would extend to hedge funds and to various exotic financial instruments. The International Monetary Fund, IMF, a European-dominated operation, would conduct regular, vigorous reviews of American financial institutions and practices. See? The European-dominated College of Supervisors would also weigh in on issues like executive compensation, and investment practices. He goes on to say, there's nothing wrong with the substance of this regulation. Experience is showing that it is needed. But it is very wrong to delegate these powers to unelected international institutions with no political accountability. So he sees what's going on here. We've basically signed our sovereignty over to the European Union. He says we have a securities, the SEC, appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate, both of whom are elected by the American people, is with the SEC, the Treasury, and the Federal Reserve that financial accountability must take place. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. He goes on to say, the European Union achieved this massive subrogation of American sovereignty the way it usually does, by negotiation, gradual bureaucratic encroachment, and without asking the voters if they approve. What's more, Bush appears to have gone down without a fight, saving his debating time for arguing against the protectionism that France's Nicolas Sarkozy was pushing. By giving Bush a seeming victory on a moratorium against protectionism for 1 year, Sarkozy was able to slip over his massive scheme for taking over the supervision of the U.S. economy. Better not to make your hair stand up on end. Continue reading. All kinds of political agendas are advancing under the cover of response to the global financial crisis. Think about this. All kinds of political agendas are advancing under the cover of response to the global financial crisis. Where Franklin Roosevelt saved capitalism by regulating it, Bush, to say nothing of Obama, has given the government control over our major financial and insurance institutions. And it isn't even our government. The power has now been transferred to the international community led by the socialist and the European Union. Will Obama govern from the left? He doesn't have to. George W. Bush has done all the heavy lifting for him. It was under Bush that the government basically took over as the chief stockholder of our financial institutions, and under Bush that we ceded our financial controls to the European Union. In doing so, he has done nothing to preserve what differentiates the vibrant American economy from those dying economies in Europe. Why have 80% of the jobs that have been created since 1980 in the industrialized world been created in the United States? How has America managed to retain its leading 24% share of global manufacturing, even in the face of the Chinese surge? How has the U.S. GDP risen so high that it essentially equals that of the European Union, which has 50% more population? It has done so by an absence of stifling regulation, a liberation of capital to flow to innovative businesses, low taxes, and by a low level of unionization that has given businesses the flexibility to grow and prosper. Europe, stagnated by taxation and regulation, has grown by a pittance while we have roared ahead. But now Bush, not Obama, Bush has given all that up and caved in to European socialists. The Bush legacy, European socialism. Who needs enemies with friends like Bush? Well, that was a little bit strong against Mr. Bush. However, when we go back and look now at the history, starting back this past summer and this past fall, this is exactly what Bush has done. And the American people as a whole do not realize this, but some are beginning to, and to comment about it on the news and in economic circles. But that's really what has happened. And so Mr. Bush got the ball rolling with what I call nationalization of the banks and insurance institutions. It began with these large government bailouts of these large banks. And of course now it's continuing on. So, you know, it's common knowledge that Mr. Obama and also his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, have well-known socialist values and views. So now Bush has made it easy for them to continue and advance their socialism. See? So it's interesting how, and then what Mr. Moore said there about we basically have come under the European Union. The other article I read to you where the European Union is actually beginning to dictate some of the policies written in our own government. So I want to read something briefly that I printed off from the online Wikipedia, which is an online encyclopedia on socialism, for those of you who may not be familiar with what it is. Basically what it is, in the common knowledge, is that it's basically a welfare state. And socialism primarily works on the premises of redistribution of wealth. Take from the rich, give to the poor. Now, if you're on the receiving end of that, it sounds all well and fine, but it really ends up being a welfare state, and it really harms everyone. And it furthermore is proven to not work as a system. But this article says socialism refers to a broad array of doctrines or political movements that envisage an egalitarian socioeconomic system in which property and the distribution of wealth are subject to social control. This control may be exercised either directly through popular collectives such as worker councils, or indirectly on behalf of the people by the state. See, in other words, state-controlled property. It's a form of communism is what it is. As an economic system, socialism is characterized by state, community, or worker ownership of the means of production. The primary concerns of socialism are social equality. Now, we hear a lot of that today, don't we, with this new administration. We heard it all last year during the campaign. That social equality, see? The primary concerns of socialism are social equality and an equitable distribution of wealth, see, distribution of wealth, that would serve the interest of society as a whole. So that's just another form of communism, type of it. The modern socialist movement had its origin largely in the working class movement of the late 19th century. In this period, the term socialism was first used in connection with the European social critics who condemned capitalism and private property. See, they condemned capitalism and private property. For Karl Marx, so that was the father of communism, for Karl Marx, who helped establish and define the modern socialist movement, socialism implied the abolition of money, markets, capital, and labor as a commodity. Think about that. For Karl Marx, who helped establish and define the modern socialist movement, socialism implied the abolition of money, markets, capital, and labor as a commodity. A diverse array of doctrines and movements have been referred to as socialist, and the various adherents of contemporary socialist movements do not agree on a common doctrine or program. The movements are split into differing and sometimes opposing branches, particularly between reformist socialists who wish to work towards socialism within the existing political systems, and revolutionary communists who wish to overthrow capitalism from the outside. Let me see, that might be, well, I'll go ahead and read this last paragraph. Since the 19th century, socialists have also differed in their vision of socialism as a system of economic organization. Some socialists have championed the complete nationalization of the means of production. Now, pause right here. Nationalization. Now, we've been hearing something about that on the news, haven't we? When the government begins to bail out these large banks and institutions, they become nationalized, see, which means government-owned, government-run. Another thing socialism will do, see, that's what they're pushing, like Hillary Clinton's big goal since the early 90s, even before then, is to have a universal health care system where it's run by the government or the state. So there'll be no more private practice. Everything will be run, all your doctors will be government employees. So there'll be no competition among doctors. In other words, all the health care quality will be the same, and it's usually a very low standard. I have a friend who lived in Britain for many years, and she said that the medical system there, which is socialized, is a horrible state, and it takes forever to get any health care, and when you do, it's of poor quality. We continue reading. It says, some Marxists, including many 20th century communists inspired by the Soviet model of economic development, have advocated the creation of centrally planned economies directed by a state that owns all the means of production. See, the state owns all the means of production. Wow. Others, including communists in Yugoslavia and Hungary in the 1970s and 80s, and Chinese communists since the reform era, and some Western communists have proposed various forms of market socialism, attempting to reconcile the presumed advantages of cooperative or state ownership of the means of production with letting market forces rather than central planners make decisions about production and change. Well, that's basically all I'm going to read from that. But it's enough to give you an idea of what socialism is about as far as a definition anyway. So here we have the socialist program being pushed into our government, and basically it's already begun by Mr. Bush, and why he did that, a lot of people are saying he just didn't really know what he was doing. I mean, it's not going to look good on his legacy or record in the long run, because he did keep the country safe for 7 years after the attacks of 9/11 of 2001. So he did do many good things, and he was a great advocate against fighting AIDS in Africa. He sent millions and millions and billions of dollars in support of that, and trying to help people across the world. But to do something like this for someone who's a conservative in just the last few months of his presidency, some are saying that he didn't realize what he was doing. He knew that we were in an economic downturn, rapid downturn, and he was coerced by many of his peers into doing this. And then, of course, appointing Henry Paulson as the head of the Treasury might have been the worst mistake he could have done. But it really, in just like Mr. Morris said in his article, just within a period of 1 month, we signed over our sovereignty to the European Union and began the road to socialism. And of course, whenever you hear on the news about banks and institutions now being nationalized, well, that's just another word of Nazism. That's what Nazi meant, is national, a type of nationalism. So I want to read at this point something that maybe kind of ties in all this stuff together, maybe by way of reminder, and shows what's in another point of view what's going on. And it's been on the website for several years now. And it's an excerpt from an article I wrote some years ago on the website entitled God's Work Now. And I'm going to read an excerpt from this article, because in this excerpt I have excerpts of Mr. Armstrong's writings. That should be no surprise. But in doing that, we'll let Mr. Armstrong explain to us what's been going on behind the scenes, which are now coming not so much behind the scenes, but in plain view for those who have eyes to see. So now I should be able to see these things. So here's what I write. It's about halfway down the article. I write the statement here. I say, so first, here's an excerpt from Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong's booklet entitled 1975 in Prophecy. Some have called this book long outdated, but is it really? Have you looked into it recently? Did you realize that this recently passed Pentecost, that was as of 2006, fulfilled and completed 1975 years since the founding of the New Testament Church by Jesus Christ in AD 31. So I just thought it was interesting at the time I wrote that, it was 1975 years had passed. Is this coincidence? Perhaps, but perhaps not. Look at the facts presented from what Mr. Armstrong warned about and what will be presented following that, then you decide. But please, please take note of what he says here, and especially notice what he says about the beginning of this invasion coming from within. See, our own, let me read this again. But please take note of what he says here, and especially notice what he says about the beginning of this invasion coming from within our own country. In the excerpt below, I have put certain words in bold or underlined them for emphasis. So below is the first excerpt from 1975 on Prophecy, in the 1956 edition. Okay, so I'll begin reading what Mr. Armstrong says here. He says, "We are not fighting a single nation in a military war, but a gigantic worldwide plainclothes army masquerading as a political party, seeking to conquer the world with an entirely new kind of warfare." See, let me read that again. We are not fighting against a nation in a military war. Let me pause here and qualify this, because he was, when leading up to this statement, he was talking about how after World War II, the Nazis went underground to come back again another day. They knew they were going to be coming back and rising again another day. And so what they've done is systematically infiltrated different countries and their ideology, pushing that ideology, which is European or German socialism. So anyway, he says, "We're not fighting a single nation or in a military war, but a gigantic worldwide plainclothes army masquerading as a political party seeking to conquer the world with an entirely new kind of warfare. It's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within." So he's talking about within our own country. Weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. All this cleverly disguised as a harmless political party. Isn't that interesting? He says, "Communism is a worldwide psychological warfare." So when you see socialism coming into our government and beginning to take over, it is nothing more than a type of communism. That's what it is. I read it to you from that, from the online encyclopedia. So, Mr. Armstrong, was he ahead of his time? You better believe he was. Continue reading. He says, "Yes, but God Almighty says of this satanic system, 'I am against thee,' Ezekiel 38, verse 3. Eventually, he will destroy it and its evil system from the face of the earth." So see, even now this is going to take place, and no matter what puny man tries to do to stop it, he's allowing these things to happen, and then he's going to bring it down himself. God is, see. "But of us," Mr. Ross, continue reading, "but of us, prophecy says that we will allow ourselves to be mixed up with foreigners. Foreigners eat away his strength unknown to him." God says, that's in Hosea 7, verses 8 through 13. He says, God says, "We fly like a silly, senseless dove to seek alliances with foreign nations, forsaking God." Well, here we have a president now that wants to go and talk and have talks with nations that are either terrorist nations or nations that sponsor terrorism. Well, historically, our policy has been to not negotiate or talk with terrorists. You can't negotiate with them. So, but here Mr. Armstrong says, "But of us, prophecy says that we allow ourselves to be mixed up with foreigners. Foreigners eat away his strength unknown to him. God says we fly like a silly, senseless dove to seek alliances with foreign nations in forsaking God." A little further down, Mr. Armstrong writes, "Most Europeans are becoming distrustful of the United States." Pause from reading. Well, that was when he wrote this. It was a long time ago, but look how much more now distrustful they are, and their own governments are speaking out directly against the United States because they can rightfully pinpoint where this recent economic worldwide crisis came from. It came from that subprime crisis that I warned about over 2 years ago, back in 2007, that was triggered at all. And they can follow the paper trail and pinpoint it exactly to where it began and when it began to the, in the United States. So, yes, as Mr. Armstrong says, most Europeans are becoming distrustful of the United States. They wonder why we have the Marshall Plan. Why are we so beneficent? Why are we sending them so much money? They can't understand altruism and generosity. They suspect ulterior motives. They are thinking more and more about the upcoming United States of Europe. Well, there you go. See that beast power. He continues, we Americans with the British gave them the idea. We've tried to organize the European nations together against Russia. They're going to unite against us. And now Europe is about ready for it. The stage is all set. All that is lacking now is a strong leader, the coming Führer, see, of Europe, that strong leader. The Germans are coming back from the destruction of World War II in breathtaking manner. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. Probably Germany will lead and dominate the upcoming United States of Europe. But Britain will be no part of it. This astounding resurrection of the Roman Empire is the very next prophesied event. The world will be dumbfounded when this military colossus actually emerges. Awesome reading there. Well, see, all this is still up to date. Still true. Continue reading. This little subtitle is Undercover in Europe. While America, this is Mr. Armstrong still, while America has been focusing its sole attention on its clumsy effort to meet psychological Cold War with antiquated diplomacy and military might, this was back in the Cold War era up through 1989, through antiquated diplomacy and military might, the real number one enemy has been perfecting its plans secretly undercover in Europe. These plans were laid by Adolf Hitler during World War II. The methodical Germans excuse me, took it into consideration the possibility that they might lose, even as they had lost World War I. This time, their plans for coming back and launching World War III were carefully laid before the close of World War II. The day that war ended, the Nazi organization went underground. See, they didn't disappear. The plans for coming back have been proceeding undercover since 1945. Already, Nazis are in many key positions in German industry, in German education, in the new German army. Okay, end of excerpt. I'd like to add there, too, in probably the United States government, but they're not, they don't call themselves Nazis or German Nazis, but it's the same, it's that same psychological mindset, see, of social, European socialism. Now, here's why I go on to write here. That book was written in the mid-1950s. Mr. Armstrong was always ahead of his time, and he even stated this, but also all of God's apostles were ahead of their time. They thought that Christ would return in their, within their lifetimes. Perhaps the only exception to this was the Apostle John, whom God used to pen the book of Revelation. But did you notice in the first and second paragraphs above that I read from, the excerpt, how Mr. Armstrong said that this warfare is totally different than any we've seen, and it will weaken us from within? That means just what it says. Weaken us from within, from our own government. And have you seen those things he mentioned fulfilled the past 20 or 30 years? And even more so since the terrorist attacks in our country? See, really, really have. And I'll continue reading, right. And he said this would happen, sapping our strength, perverting, I'm quoting from Mr. Armstrong here, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, do we see that, demoralizing our armed forces. Have we seen this happen? You'd have to be totally asleep not to see it, and it's getting worse by the day. God gave Mr. Armstrong the foresight to see what was coming, and he said it was going to come from within, and he knew that our own government would be used to weaken us, our own government would be used to weaken us, as he stated above. Then after that weakening took place, then would come the invasion and captivity of our peoples. Brethren and friends, I tell you, the sword is already in our land, and soon it will be shown in full force. Notice this co-worker letter from 1980, in which I have underlined certain points that may have been overlooked by the majority of us. But again, it shows that Mr. Armstrong was aware of something going on in our own government. He was fully aware that all the governments of this world, and yes, even including the good old USA, are the governments of Satan. So here below is an excerpt from a co-worker letter dated January 3rd, 1980. And it says, on January 3rd, 1979, 1 year ago today, without the legally required prior notice or warning, an armed task force swooped down in a massive surprise attack in utter violation of the Constitution of the United States on the headquarters complex of the Worldwide Church of God, Ambassador College, The Plain Truth and other publications, and Ambassador International Cultural Foundation in Pasadena, California. Listen, it illegally and forcibly assaulted, seized possession of, and took over control of this long-established church, college, and foundations. Undoubtedly, you read of this in the newspapers. It's now time you knew the true facts, the inside facts, for they loudly shout the question, is America being taken over by a communist-oriented government or one Nazi-oriented? Are your constitutional and civil rights being destroyed? Your liberties, our forefathers fought and died to secure for us, being stealthily taken from us? Pause from reading. That's a good question, see? That's a question for us today. Now, I know he used the term here, communist-oriented, and then Nazi-oriented, where those aren't popular terms today, see? But there are other terms that are that tie right into that. And one of them is socialism, you know, or social economic structure, you know, the redistribution of wealth, you know, statements like that, or just modern ways of saying the same thing. And that's what we see happening in our government, and it began this past year, this past fall, and it's going to continue right on with this new administration, that redistribution of government. And you can use any term you want, and Mr. Armstrong used the terms that were popular at that time in the 70s and 80s, and which was communist or Nazi oriented. So I'll read this again. He's asking a question, is America being taken over by a communist oriented government or one Nazi oriented? Are your constitutional and civil rights being destroyed? Your liberties our forefathers fought and died to secure for us stealthily being taken away from us? See? A little further down in the letter, Mr. Armstrong writes, the secretly court-appointed receiver without a shred of evidence, but on the trumped-up, ridiculously false allegations of six expelled former members, came with an armed task force to take over the $80 million worth of headquarters property, including the most beautiful campus in America. Now listen to this. He says, this invasion of state, see that terminology? This invasion of state against church was made solely for the witch hunt purpose of seeking to find some evidence to support the baseless allegations of embittered expelled members. There was no evidence. Hence, there was no criminal charge. Records were taken by them. The church, which sponsors its associated educational, publishing, and cultural organizations, had, of course, always employed competent, certified public accountants. But listen to this. After this unconstitutional invasion, see, after this unconstitutional invasion, we employed a CPA firm, which I understand to be the largest in the United States, at our own expense, to make a thorough examination, to check and verify the audits of our smaller employed CPA firm. Now, after 1 year, not a particle of wrongdoing, not one shred of wrongdoing has of any kind has been found. Well, that's the end of Mr. Armstrong's excerpt. And I go on to write here. Now, if you go back and read those excerpts again, especially where I underline certain points, we should be able to clearly see that Mr. Armstrong was fully aware was behind the governments of this world, and yes, even in the United States. Okay, so that's the end of my excerpt from my article there, with Mr. Armstrong's excerpts included. So my point there is, this is very much up to date. This, even what Mr. Armstrong wrote, but even what I wrote 2 years ago, is up to date more today than it was, well, actually more than 2 years ago. It was like, was it over three, almost 4 years ago when I wrote this. So it is more up to date today. And hopefully we'll be able to pay more attention to what's going on behind the scenes now as this government, our government, is changing. So that's what's going on behind the government, behind the scenes in our own government, as an overview. There's so much more. There's so much to read on what's going on right now in the world, just on the economic side, that it's mind-boggling. So I try not to pull out every shred of evidence anymore, because I don't have to. It's all in the news now. When I first started speaking on this couple of years ago, I tried to give more detailed information of what was about to happen. Well, now it's all out in the news, and you can see the evidence, and it's all coming unraveled around us. And as I've said many times in recent sermons, it really has to do with what God says in the last part of the United States and Britain in prophecy. It's God that's removing our wealth. He's got to break this hard-headed, rebellious society down so he can begin to work with it at some time in the future. But what I'd like to do in the remaining time here is just show what God's economic system is going to be like in the world tomorrow, because God does have an economic stimulus plan. It's based on his laws. It's based on his Ten Commandments and all his laws, including the tithing system. Tithing is a law of God. And so I'd like to read momentarily from page 321 of Mystery of the Ages, and it's the chapter Mystery of the Kingdom of God, and it shows what God is going to do in the world tomorrow with his economic system. So I'll begin reading here on page 321, and the subtitle is, What About the Economic Structure? God shows Jerusalem will become the financial capital as well as the spiritual capital of earth. Today, it's not. It's just a mess like any other city. The Creator says of the newly built city, Then thou shalt see and flow together, and thy heart shall fear, and be enlarged because of the abundance of the sea, and which is the world's gold and silver reserves, or mostly under the seas, shall be converted into thee. The forces, the margin says wealth, of the Gentiles shall come to you. That's in Isaiah 60, verse 5. And he says, But as we have read, God Almighty says that he will raise many places now covered by the waters of the ocean, that he'll make much more land available. Scientists know most of the earth's raw materials lie in the strata beneath the depths of the seas. God says this vast wealth will become available for use during the reign of Jesus Christ on this earth. God says the wealth of the world will be centered in Jerusalem, and that the vast rebuilding programs, rehabilitation process, and New Age pioneering that begin will be backed by that wealth. And then he quotes from Haggai 2:6, which says, Yet once it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the desire, or in other words, desirable things of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, says the Eternal of Hosts. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, says the Eternal of Hosts. But God's great treasury will be for public display. No gold bricks reposing in deep subterranean vaults, utterly useless except for their meaning. No fear of thievery or robbery. But breathtaking, beautiful decorations for the Capitol building, the temple in which Christ will dwell. A fixed standard will be set up. See, a fixed monetary standard will be set up. And values will never change. No more speculating or gambling on other people's ability. Never again will any person become rich from investing in the labors and creative ability of another person. See, that's socialism. That's economic socialism right there. Never again will any person become rich from investing in the labors and creative ability of another person. No more stock markets, world banks, financing centers, insurance companies, mortgage companies, loan agencies, or time payments. Think about that. No more stock markets, no more world banks or financing centers, insurance companies, mortgage companies, loan agencies, or time payments. In God's abundant government, people will buy only what they need when they can afford it, when they have the cash to pay for it. No more interest and no more taxes. Would that be a blessing? I know I've read from this before in some of my other sermons, but it's such a beautiful overview of what we're looking forward to in the world tomorrow. The next subtitle, which does tie into this, and it kind of ties back into something that lady mentioned in an email to me at the beginning of this message, talking about what her ex-minister there is doing, screaming at their people, but that's the wrong approach. Unfortunately, I'm not the type to do that. I give people the benefit of the doubt that they know God's laws, and it's not for me to scream at people or to threaten them because they're not tithing or any other laws of God, keeping any other laws. So that's just not the mind of Christ to do that. But this subtitle here is this tithing system. He says, but the tithing system will be universal. Today's governments demand up to 40, 50, and even 90% in inheritance taxes, income taxes, hidden taxes, federal, state, county, school board, and city taxes. But God requires only 10%. And out of that 10% will be financed the entire governmental, educational, and spiritual leadership of the whole earth. Isn't that amazing? Then he goes on to quote from Malachi 3 about, will a man rob God, yet you rob me? And then he says, I'm not going to read all that, but he says, that prophecy is for now. See, that prophecy of Malachi 3, verses 8 through 10 is for now. And he says, what a blessing that will be. None of the financial burdens that curse most peoples today. God says financial blessings are to become the order of the day. See? Take away thievery, robbery, accidents, weather damage, rust, rotten decay from plants, stores, manufacturing concerns. How much less could merchandise then sell for, and how much greater profits? And then skipping over to page 324, there's another short section, which I know I've read before, but it says that the economy of the world healed. That's what we need today, see? That's what the world's economy needs today, is healing. All these men are trying to, based on human reasoning, are trying to throw money at the problems they see, and that's not the answer. But he says the economy of the world healed, since governments will be in the hands of the spiritual family of God, see, that's who it's going to be in, and partially administered by those human leaders directly under that great ruling family, and since there will be no huge bureaus watching other huge bureaus, which are suspiciously watching other bureaus, no military establishment, see, no military, no intelligence or spy agencies, or members of Interpol, no huge cartels, no monopolies or unions or giant government spending, the economy of the world will be healed. Think of it. No more foreign aid. None of the wasted billions to buy lovers or allies, as it says in Ezekiel chapter 23, verse 9, Lamentations, chapter 1, verse 2 and 19, in Ezekiel, the 16th chapter. No more foreign aid. None of the wasted billions to buy lovers who turn and rend you later, so they turn on you. No more strings attached. Government grants to industry, to science and space technology, to schools and institutions for research. Instead, every necessary industry, educational institution, and business will be in sound financial condition. What a world that will be. Well, it certainly will be. It will be a wonderful world. So basically what I've tried to do here is just show an overview of what's going on in the news today and what God reminds us of in his word and through what Mr. Armstrong wrote, that there is a better time coming, but we got some bad times coming. And I'm telling you, brethren, it's going to get a lot worse. We're only seeing the tip of the iceberg, but at least now you should be able to see it, those out there who may have been skeptics over the last couple or several years, as I've talked about this and warned about it. But now the evidence is there and growing daily, and I can tell you it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Indeed, this is going to probably lead us right into the tribulation. So it is exciting times, fearful times, and it's going to affect, like I said many times, every single one of us to some degree. So basically, you know, these things that I mentioned today, such as what European Union is looking at developing a sovereign bond or sovereign single bond to compete or rival the U.S. Treasury bond. And when they do that, that'll be the end of it for the U.S. T-bill. I mean, it's almost the end of it anyway, with people, investors pulling out of it and these large countries pulling out of it. But it's just going to help put more power into the European Union. And also, I mentioned that the European Union is watching the wary of the U.S. protectionism threat, which is what the United States is trying to put into these economic stimulus packages and bills to try to force more Americans to buy Americans, to buy American-made products for these new projects coming up to help stimulate the economy. And of course, the reason for that is to help keep the money within our own country to help stimulate the economy. But the Europeans are dead set against it, as I stated there, and the European Trade Commission is actively trying to prevent that from happening. And also, I had read that article by Dick Morris about European socialism that had begun at the tail end of the Bush administration, where basically we've signed our sovereignty over to the European Union, and most Americans are not aware of it yet. And but that's very, very interesting, and we see more of it happening every day, especially with this new administration. Then, of course, what I tried to tie it into with what Mr. Armstrong had written in that article of God's Work Now, of where it's all tying into that enemy from within, where we'll be weakened from within. And it has to do with that socialism or that type of philosophy or mindset of that type of government. And it's replacing our democratic capitalist type of government, that or capitalism-based type of government that we've seen for most of the history of this country. It has changed. It has changed forever, my friends and brethren, and it's not a change for the good. However, there's nothing we can really do about it. We don't voice our opinions. We're not part of a political group. But what we do need to be aware of is that these changes are taking place for a reason, and it's still in God's hands, and He's going to bring this, take it under control before long and bring it down, because this country has to be humbled so that He can begin to work with this nation, the United States and Britain and the rest of the Israelite countries. So it's all happening for a reason. But to close with, I want to read something. If you have your Bibles, turn to Psalms chapter 122. It's a prophecy about Jerusalem. And you can look at this two ways. It has to do with what's going to happen with the city of Jerusalem on this earth, but also has to do, as you'll see, with spiritual Jerusalem, which is a type of God's church. So this applies to us today, God's spiritual Jerusalem, but also it's a prophecy for the world tomorrow. In Psalms 122, David says, "I was glad when they said to me, 'Let us go into the house of the Eternal.'" So this is the subject here, see, God's house. "Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem." So see, he's talking about God's house, God's church. Verse 3, "Jerusalem is built as a city that is compact together, where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Eternal, to the testimony of Israel, to give thanks in the name of the Eternal. For thrones are set there for judgment, the thrones of the house of David." So this is what is going to happen in the world tomorrow, when all the tribes will be coming up to God's house or headquarters to worship. See, I mentioned that just a little while ago, reading from Mystery of the Ages. Mr. Armstrong was talking about that. Jerusalem is the headquarters of the world at that time. Verse 6, "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem." See, we're talking about spiritual Jerusalem here. We need to pray for that peace. In physical Jerusalem today, there is no peace. There's certainly nothing wrong with praying for peace there, but it's about to become a place that's destitute completely of peace, because there's physical prophecies that have to be fulfilled before Christ returns. But the Jerusalem we're talking about here is spiritual Jerusalem, and the Jerusalem of the world tomorrow, which will be the headquarters not only of God's church, but of all of the earth. "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper who love you." See, prosperity. "Peace be within your walls. Prosperity within your palaces." So that's part of that economic, God's economic plan for the world tomorrow. See, it's going to be peace, and there's going to be prosperity. God's the one who prospers. See, he's the one who gives wealth. For this, verse 8, "For the sake of my brethren," see, my brethren in God's church, "and companions, I will now say, peace within you." Verse 9, "Because of the house of the Lord our God." See, that's why. "Because of the house of the Eternal our God, I will seek your good." So that's a very inspiring prophecy for the world tomorrow, but it also has some things that we can glean from it for right now for God's church. And he does promise peace and prosperity to his church if we follow his ways, seeing his laws. So I hope this has been helpful, brethren. It's kind of a mixed mash of things I gave you today, but hopefully it all ties into the fact that God, there's a lot of bad news economically, and there's so much more I could have addressed. There's so much, but I know you guys probably spend time yourselves seeing this on the news. So I just wanted to address those articles that kind of bring in some things that are happening behind the scenes and show where it ties in with what Mr. Armstrong taught. And it's still very much up to date. But yet the good news is God has an economic stimulus plan that's going to surpass anything that man can ever come up with. And I hope that's the economic stimulus that we're all looking forward to. And it's called the kingdom of God in the world tomorrow. So I hope this has been helpful. Until next time, do take care, my friends. I love you all.